So this is Wednesday, the 20th of June, 2018, and I'm meeting with U Cho Miang. So thank you very much for spending time with me to talk about your life story. Could we start at the beginning?
Yeah, of course. To imitate a little bit of Charles Dickens, I would say if I were to begin the story of my life with the beginning, I was born in 1945, 7th of May. And if we look at Myanmar's history, that's just about the time where the war was beginning to end. And I have a diary of my father. It was a small notebook, and in that notebook he jotted down the entry of the beginning of my life. Mo was born on 7th of May. And he said, I can still hear the sound of gunshots in the distance. And he said, I guess they are still fighting. So I was born on Inya Road, and there's one big house. It still stands today. It's called 82 Inya Road. At that time, it belonged to Dokin Thettin, and her husband was Utin. And my father and mother were like their children. So to give birth to me, my mother had to go to this house, and there, that was where I was born, 82 Inya Road, at the house of Utin and Dokin Thettin.
Rather than at a hospital?
No, it was at a house. And Utin, by the way, if I may add, is the architect of the town hall. He drew the architectural drawings of the town hall. And while he was doing his work, he actually fell down and broke his ribs. So that's the story that I heard from my father. And Dokin Thettin, of course, is related to us, because Dokin Thettin's daughter was married to my uncle's uncle, elder brother of my father, so by the name of Utwema, and he was an accountant in the municipal at that time. So I will cut short the early history of my life, because all I remember is that I was very eager to play. Every morning I was thinking to myself, what should I be doing today? Should I be making houses with clay, or pretending to be a cook, or taking my catapult to shoot the small birds in the compound? So,
but what about your mum and dad? What did they do?
Okay, I'll tell you. My father was a railway man, and he joined the Burma Railways as a ATS, what they call it, Assistant Traffic Superintendent. And during those days, because there were a lot of Hindi-speaking Indians in the civil service, one of the subjects that they had to study when they joined the Burma Railways, it was called Burma Railways, was Hindi, because they needed to interact with a lot of staff who were Indians. And my father's last posting before he was retired was, his last rank was Deputy General Manager. And my mother, of course, was a housewife, but she was also a graduate of Rangoon University. So both my father and mother met each other at the Rangoon University. And Rangoon University was called later on in the successive governments It was called Arts and Science University, Rangoon Arts and Science University. And now, in the current administration, the name has reverted back to Yangon University. Instead of Rangoon, we are calling it Yangon, because Yangon is a correct pronunciation of the word. Rangoon is an anglicized pronunciation. So my early childhood was very happy childhood. Our father had his railway's house. It was a big house on Pierre Road, 66 Pierre Road, and there were three houses that belonged to the Burma Railways. One where we stayed, 66, and the next one was occupied by the person who was the chief accountant, and the other one was occupied by the person who was a chief engineer. And now all these houses have been torn down, and where you can see the museum, a national museum on Pierre Road.
Did you have siblings?
Yeah, I'll talk about that. We are four of us. So the first, the eldest one is my sister, Daw Wei Myain. The second is my elder brother, U Tim Myain, and myself, Chow Myain, and then my younger brother, Lin Myain. My sister married a Foreign Service officer by the name of U So Myin, who retired as a deputy director in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and he served in India and Belgrade. And my elder brother retired as a deputy director in the housing department. And later on, he went to the United States. And then when he came back, he got involved in architecture again. So he's a freelance architect. And my younger brother, of course, was a Navy officer, a major in the Navy. Then his services were transferred to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. He went to Geneva as a counselor, and then to Paris as ambassador, and Washington as ambassador during the time of President Bush. And I joined the Ministry of Education, working for the Institute of Education as an English tutor. I was there from 2 years. I graduated high school in 1961, then studied 4 years for my BSc degree, Bachelor of Science, and then after my bachelor's degree, I applied for the post of tutor in the English department, and that was 1965.
Did you have any idea that what you wanted to do with your life?
Yes, from my early childhood, I wanted to be a diplomat. And my father used to tell me this very intriguing story, because my father, as a railway man, had to travel by train, and he had a special inspection carriage. And whenever I looked out of the window, I would see this guard with the flags, red flag and green flag, and I could hear the flags fluttering. And I was fascinated by the flag and the sound. And one day my father related this to one Hindu Indian astrologer. And this astrologer said, this little boy is one day going to become diplomat. So after my stint at the Institute of Education, I joined the Foreign Ministry in 1968.
Was that difficult to get into?
It is. It was. in the sense that during our times there was no pre-planned examinations. The foreign ministry would just announce whenever they needed new officers. So we never knew when they were going to have the next exam, entrance exam. So as a tutor, I started preparing myself. And luckily, I had about 3 years to prepare for this examination. So I prepared for this examination, and according to my recollection, about 400 applicants sat for this examination. It was conducted by the PSC, Public Service Commission, and only four were selected. So one is the person sitting in the other room, Unye Mao Shen, myself, and U Chau Tin Sui, who is now Union Minister, and U Mia Tan, he was also ambassador to Geneva. Unye Mao Shen was ambassador also to many, many places. And U Chau Tin Sui was a permanent representative at the UN. So all had very satisfactory diplomatic careers. But I myself joined the Movement for Democracy in 1988 when the whole government machinery stopped. And the foreign ministry, we were in the leadership role in the foreign ministry. We shut down the foreign ministry for one week. And all the embassies also supported this movement for change. Change from a centralized form of government to a democratic form of government, a representative form of government. So about 12 officers were given retirement, premature retirement. It was not dismissal, it was premature retirement. And I still get my pension.
So you were one of the 12?
Yeah, I still get my pension. So my diplomatic career was cut off, I would say mid-career. And that was also, I would say, a blessing in disguise. Because as soon as I was given retirement, I got some feelers from two political parties, NLD as well as the government party, NUP. And all 12 of us had a meeting and decided that we're not going to go into politics. We'll just do anything else but politics. So I just stuck to staying at home, giving tuition, and writing memoirs. And because of my my background, I was recruited by the UNDP, and I became a program officer in the local country office, UNDP country office. The office was at by the lakeside of Kandoji Lake. And I served there 4 years as a program officer. And I was in charge of about five very important sectors. One of them was trade, transport, cooperatives, and labor. And for me, it was a very rewarding experience because I learned a lot. And after that, because of my service in UNDP, I was sent to Hanoi for 4 months. It was like an exchange of officers. So I was there at the UNDP in Hanoi, and I wrote a paper about a strategic plan for developing the Vietnamese economy, agricultural sector. And after that I came back. But during that time, I had the opportunity to read all these messages that were coming out from headquarters. And they were announcing the formation of the United Nations Transitional Authority in Cambodia. Okay. I got interested and I applied. and I got the job. I was the only person in the whole country office that got the job. I was attached to the civil administration, what they call civil service component of this very big UN operation. It was funded by the Japanese, $2 billion by the Japanese.
Our government, the Australian government, was quite involved too.
Yeah. Many governments were involved, and Australia also sent their military contingent, so did Pakistan, so did some of the African countries, and the top guy was Akashi, Secretary General's envoy, special representative to Cambodia. And that experience was very useful for me in terms of how peacekeeping was done, and also about how different nationals interacted with each other, how they collaborated, how they argued. But it was very useful. And after that, my wife got an appointment with the UNFPA, and she...
Well, what's that?
UNFPA is the United Nations Fund for Population Activities, and she was working as a secretary to the resident rep, Japanese official called Mr. Kitatani. Mr. Kitatani passed away last year. So she got a job in New York headquarters, and when I finished my stint with UNTAC, I transferred to New York to join her. And for about 7 months, I was without a job. But I made the best of that time, reading newspapers, attending French classes, and doing meditation.
What year are we now?
The internet. That was 94. I arrived in the US in 94. And from 94 till 2014, I was in America.
You got a job then?
Yeah. I didn't get a job for 7 months, and after that, I got a consultant job with the UNDP headquarters. I was asked to do a desk review of 82 projects. So, and that was how I began my career in New York headquarters. We were living in, first of all, in Queens and then in New Jersey. And I had to commute to New York every day by bus. And I was with the UNDP for about 16 years. And the bureau that I worked was called the RBAP, Regional Bureau for Asia and Pacific. And at that time, the regional director happened to be a Myanmar national by the name of Unetran, Dr. Netran. And we didn't know each other. I knew about him only after I was appointed. And I was not able to join as a permanent staff, regular staff, but I was a consultant all the time.
For all those years?
Yeah, consultant. And my consultancy was extended after it expired every 3 months or 4 months.
And your wife?
And my wife was working for UNFPA as a staff member.
For the 14 years as well?
Yeah. So her benefits were much better than I. than mine, of course.
Yeah.
And as a consultant, there was no pension. It was just a lump sum payment. But what was most valuable for me was the experience of working in an international organization at the headquarters level. And I was unofficially like the executive officer for the regional director, because he depended on my experience and my advice, especially in the political field.
Then what happened?
And then 2014 I came back.
Your wife's role finished too? Or
we all
packed up and...
Yeah, she retired and we packed up and we gave back the rented apartment and we came back. Because by that time we had already built our house on Inya Road. And I was lucky because I have my land, the land, small plot that was given to us by my father. So we divided this plot into four smaller plots, and each of us had a plot. So I built my house on that plot. That's where I'm living now.
And what about children? Did you have children?
I have one son.
Yeah.
And he's a computer person. He's staying in New York.
Because he would have spent a lot of his childhood there.
Yeah, he finished his education at CUNY, what they call the City University of New York. And he became very interested in computers. He's a programmer. And now he has three companies, heading three companies. And one company is a joint venture with the local people here, Myanmar.
Okay.
Myanmar programmers. But he lives in New York.
And married to an American, or?
He's not married, but he has a girlfriend.
Okay, okay.
And he's been living with this girlfriend for quite some time. So when I came back in 2014, I said to myself, I don't want to work for anybody else or in any other company as working under somebody else. Doesn't suit me. Doesn't suit my temperament. I have to be the leader. I have to be the leader. So I formed my own company called the Aze Anze Economic Enterprise. Aze means, Aze actually means stable, still, and cool. Cool as opposed to hot or stressful. Anze means success. So it has to be successful as well as stable and peaceful.
Calm, yeah.
Yeah, calm. So, and under that, I initiated the MLC, which is the Mingala Learning Center. It is a center for teaching English. But it sounds very simple, very humble, center for teaching English, but actually it's a center for research, researching the political situation in Myanmar and what's happening in the world.
Also, English language teaching is a small part.
That's just like a cover.
Okay.
The real main component is research. And in the future, I intend to work as a consultant for British firms or American firms, whatever foreign firms wish to come here. And if they need my advice, if they say, okay, we are going to invest in this sector, how is it? Is it going to be profitable or not? I can just say yes or no. And that would be worth billions of dollars. If you make a wrong investment in the wrong sector, all your money is gone.
And then how did you get your current role?
Current role, I was offered this as a member, to become a member of the Myanmar Institute for Strategic and International Studies, which is like a board formed by a presidential order. And to become a member, you cannot apply. They select you. So I was selected by the then Deputy Minister for Foreign Affairs, and somebody came to me, and actually Ukumalin came to me and said, the Deputy Minister wants you to be on this board, and I said okay, and that's how I started. And I was reading the newspapers, especially the Global New Light of Myanmar, and found a lot of errors and grammatical mistakes. And one day I happened to mention this to my colleague, Uchotin Sui, and he said, can you help? I said, sure, why not? The only thing is I cannot work as a 9-to-5 person. I can work from home by internet. And he said, that's fine. So I was offered a job as senior editorial consultant. I chose this title myself.
Do you still do that?
Yeah. I have to edit every night.
Every day?
Every night.
Every night.
Without holiday.
My goodness.
No holiday. Even when I go abroad, whether on business or for pleasure, I have to work every night.
God.
On my computer. But although it is tiresome and sometimes I would like to have my freedom, but it's really worth it because I get to edit the news for the 7 VIPs of Myanmar, starting from the president, state councillor, 2 vice presidents, 2 speakers, and the senior general.
But that's a separate role you have. That's another role. That's
the editorial role.
Yeah.
But the UEHRD, Union Enterprise for Humanitarian Assistance, Resettlement, and Development in Rakhine, that's separate. And that role I got because I was at that time translating the speeches for the president's occasional messages for these Shan State Day.
This is the last president or the current?
Both. Last president and current president.
Right.
So whenever there is occasion for the president to speak in Burmese, I have to translate it within 1 or 2 days.
From English to Burmese, or from
Burmese to English?
Burmese to English.
Because Global New Light is an English newspaper.
Yes, yes.
And I have to make sure that whatever goes out to the Western press is grammatically correct, and the words have to be selected so that it carries the same nuance that the speaker wanted to convey.
And is that your role in the State Council's office? Is that the one you're talking about? Is that
no, that's an add-on, actually. The actual, my contract only covers editing the news. It didn't cover the speeches. The speeches I'm doing for free because of the honor.
Right.
Yeah.
For the State Councillor and
yeah,
for the President.
Yeah, State Councillor and the President.
Wow.
And sometimes, maybe if they request, I have to do for the Vice President also. But right now, I haven't had any requests for the Vice President.
That doesn't
only
sound
like President and State Councillor.
That doesn't sound like a retirement.
No. So I would like to joke. When people ask me, have you retired? And I would say, of course I have retired. It's like putting on new tires to the old car.
You're as busy as ever. Huh?
I am, yeah.
And you enjoy it?
Yes, as long as I'm healthy. But there's also one advice for people who have retired. If a person retires and does nothing, he gets old quicker.
Yeah.
But if you keep your interest in what's happening in the world, and if you keep yourself fit, and keep your mind updated, then you age slower. That's my belief.
Well, you're going to live to 120 at the rate that you're...
I don't know. But personally, I would like to stay at least maybe after my 80th birthday. After that, I don't mind.
So
I'll move on to another galaxy.
Another galaxy.
Galaxy far, far away.
Good movie. So going back, I'm not looking for the political thing about it, but go back to 1988.
Mm-hmm.
How, you know, when you said 12 of you got together and all of the a number of the embassies around the world.
Mm.
I think for researchers in years to come, it'd be interesting to know how did you all get together? How did it all? This was the student uprising, I think, at that time.
Yeah, it was a student uprising, but later on, the strike. And there was a nationwide strike, and all the government ministries were involved. They were on strike, and the only ministries left at that time were the Minister of Foreign Affairs and the Ministry of Defense. Only two.
Kept working.
Yeah. So just imagine what would happen if the Ministry of Defense shut down. There would be utter chaos.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when the foreign ministry shut down, no passports, no visas, nothing. No one could go anywhere. And we were doing it only for 1 week.
But how did you
just to show our displeasure?
Were there phone calls that took place at that time between?
There was wireless communication.
Right.
With the embassies.
Right.
We didn't have internet or email at that time.
No.
Wireless, and all the other embassies supported the strike. Mainly because there was the civilian casualties.
Yes.
We were very horrified.
But did you all consciously know that would be the end of your careers?
We didn't even think about that.
You didn't even think about it?
No. It didn't even occur to us what would happen to us. We were only thinking about what would happen to the country.
Right.
Yeah.
But it could have been even more dramatic than early retirement.
Yeah, we could have been captured and put in jail.
Yeah.
Or even shot. But it never occurred to us.
It's amazing, isn't it, how it all happened.
It was, yeah. But the interesting thing was that our uprising, the government wanted to call it very small demonstrations, but we see it as a nationwide uprising. 88 and 89, Tiananmen. It caught on in China.
Like an Asian spring.
Yeah, one year after that, it happened in China.
And you think there's a link?
I don't know. There might be. Because the news were traveling. Could be. I haven't studied the Chinese uprising in detail, so I don't know. But we were studying what was happening in Eastern Europe at that time, especially economic reform. And the officers in the foreign ministry were very much interested in how reform was taking place in Eastern Europe. And that made us aware that we should also reform our own economy. Because the socialist economy, as it was being implemented in our country, was total chaos.
Yeah.
It didn't work at all.
We there's that jargon of the downward path of socialism.
Downward spiral.
Downward spiral.
Yeah.
But how influential were civil servants like you to convincing the military to change the economic plan of the country?
If you study what happened after 88, the next government that came to power, it was a military government headed by General Soma. The name was State Law and Order Restoration Council.
SLORC.
It sounded like an agency from the James Bond movie.
Correct.
But if you look at the title, during our strike, we had a meeting in the foreign ministry across the street, and we had a press release, and there were about 10 points. And one point was that we didn't like at all the fact that the socialist government was sending cadres into the Ministry of Foreign Affairs over and above our normal foreign service officers. They were blocking our development. That was one point. The other point was that because of the utter chaos happening at that time, garbage was not being collected, there were no buses, things were getting really bad, so we said, there have to be law and order. And in Burmese, we said "Yeomopidyai," which means during the time of the kings, "Nye" means to be still. "Wop" means to be prostrate on the ground. "Pya" means to be pressed by somebody, like an elephant's foot. So that's a Burmese word for stability. So we said there has to be stability and rule of law. And the military junta that came up took that name, State Law and Order Restoration Council. So the next one that came up was SPDC, State Peace and Development Council. And that name also, when I was in New York, we were having a small private meeting, all these activists, and he said, we were talking to ourselves, we have to form an association, Peace and Development Association Society in Myanmar. It was a very private, about four or five at the most 7 people. But I think it leaked up, and the next military junta that came up with a name state, SPDC, Peace and Development Council. So which means that Big Brother was always listening.
Everywhere. What did you used to call them, MI, didn't you?
Yeah, military intelligence. Yeah.
Is that true then?
It's true.
So like, for example, in your story then, one of the 7 people, unbeknownst to you, could have been
a double agent.
Right.
Who knows?
Right. And was that a worrying time where you didn't know, you know, expressing, again, for researchers in 20, 30 years, could you openly express your feelings to your wife, to your friends, about how you saw things, or did you have
to... I never discussed politics with my wife.
Never?
Never. And that is a very strong discipline that I keep to myself, even when I was working as a Foreign Service officer. Because whatever information you share with your wife, you can endanger her life.
Right.
Yeah. So
and what about friends?
Friends also, never. No. Only selected.
Okay. And
very
is that
selected.
Typical? Do you think that's typical of a Burmese of your generation? That you
yes,
few
during that time, yes, it's typical.
Few people you could
because,
trust.
Because of the fear.
Yeah.
You never knew.
Brothers.
It's just like in Eastern Europe.
But do you think of the Stasi or whatever it was?
Even with my family, I never discussed what I do.
And they with you, same?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
we keep in compartments.
But
many of the things that I did, my brothers don't know.
Right.
And I don't tell them.
But Myanmar or Burma then, it wasn't as cut off as people thought, right? You were able to find out what was happening in the world around you.
Yeah, BBC and VOA. That was the only link. But the funny thing is that in 88, if you go all across the country, people had these small phones, shortwave radios, powered by batteries. So they were all listening every morning to VOA, BBC. That was the only source of real, genuine news that they could get.
Is that in Burmese language or in...
Burmese.
Burmese.
Yeah, Burmese. Yeah. But it was broadcast in English and Burmese. But for the general population, Burmese was important for them.
And do you think everybody did try and... Was it illegal to listen to VOA?
No, it was not illegal.
Not illegal. The other thing I noticed at that period, which used to shock me, was everyone had satellite dishes, even though it was completely illegal.
They just put up.
Everyone put it up, and so that's why I'm saying people think it was a country that was cut off, but in many ways
it was not.
You got information.
Even Aung San Suu Kyi, when she was in house arrest, under house arrest, she could listen to the radio, shortwave radio. Only thing was that she was not allowed to read whatever magazines that came out.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. She had no access.
There's one thing that, again, I think should be interesting to people in the future, but I've noticed there's a lot of, and given your role in communications, fake news. Like Facebook seems to have... There's a lot of incorrect stories that go out on Facebook.
And I believe the only anecdote, antidote.
Antidote.
So
yes.
Not anecdote. Antidote for fake news is to be able to release the real news very quickly and be truthful to the people, to your own people. Because if the government starts telling half-truths or lies, then the people would have lost their confidence in whatever government, in whatever country, and that would be a disaster.
Right.
So, truth, quickly.
And that
and
is...
you have to care for the people.
And certainly the current government.
Yeah, that's why Aung San Suu Kyi's government came up with this logo, Time for Change, and after 2 years she changed that to Together with the People. So in our mind, whatever the people felt was the most important thing. And that's why she has given time to meet the people at the grassroots level. Just like the American presidents organizing town hall meetings.
But some of the fake news doesn't come from the government. It seems to spread like wildfire here.
Yeah, so this is like tit for tat, you know. Hate speech and fake news can come from both sides.
Yeah.
Because it's so easy to put things up on Facebook.
Yeah.
And everybody has a smartphone.
Yeah.
So it can come from both sides. And in my opinion, it starts with the individual. They have to know how to behave.
Right.
Yeah.
And do you think individuals know how to behave in...
No, not at all. Not at the moment. They have to be educated. They need to be educated.
So what about the little man here, the little woman, little man? Are they interested in politics? Are they interested in the world? Or is it just a matter of survival and all they're interested in is earning enough to feed their families?
You would be surprised the percentage of cell phone penetration in Burma, Myanmar, is quite high. In one of the magazines I saw the figure 90%, but I don't know how they came up with this figure. But anyway, if you go walk about in the city, in the bazaars, in the marketplace, and look around who's having a smartphone, they are all using their smartphones and they are talking to each other, going into Facebook and taking pictures, taking videos, uploading.
But do they talk politics, do you think?
They talk politics.
They do talk politics.
In the Burmese language. And if you don't know the Burmese language, you cannot read it. But those who can read it, a lot of activity. It's like, it's not even a very faint chatter. It's clamor.
And do you keep an eye on that? Do you try and keep up with?
To a certain extent, yes.
Because in your communications team, all the people that are there, I mean, presumably that is trying to understand what the people are saying, right?
So the process of communications is, as you know already, it's two-way. So you have to know what you are going to respond, how you are going to respond, and you have to know what's happening in all these cyberspace. So cyberspace has to be monitored. At one time, the British fleet was a master of the oceans. So in cyberspace, you also have to know what's happening. Otherwise, you don't know what to say or what to do. And it's real time. So that makes it more urgent. So when I wake up every morning, the first thing I do is look at my iPad. What's happening on Facebook? What's happening in all these places?
And would Daw Soo Chee also do that, or would she?
I assist her.
Yes, yeah, that's right.
To make sure that she sees the right thing.
Okay.
Yeah, at the right time. Yeah.
So if you see something, you'll communicate. You better have a look at this.
I have ways to communicate. So.
I'm sure you. I'm sure you do.
So.
Well, U Cho Miang. Thank you very much for spending this time with me, and I look forward to keeping in contact. Thank you.
Please.